Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Geek Roulette. I'm your host, Mike Spriegel, and your other host is...
John Lundquist. Hello, everybody.
So, this is an episode that we're re-recording.
Podcasting.
Let's just say that I have a new laptop, we have a new mixing board, we have individual microphones, and we're going through the growing pains of...
screwing everything up. I mean, it was fine.
Yes, thank you. I did kind of probably screw up, and, you know, that's fine. That's part of the mistake. It's part of the process.
So like I say, you're not a true podcast until you've lost several episodes into the ether of the internet.
And this is only, like, the third episode we lost.
I think so. Second one of, well, two of them for this one, right?
Right, one from the previous iteration, yes. Correct.
Which might be getting a redo.
Right, we'll talk about
that. Ominous foreshadowing.
And you know what, I'm going to talk about that in my recommendations, actually.
Yeah.
So before we get there, though, let's talk about what the main topic of today's episode is. Today, we're talking again, but for the first time for your ears.
Yes.
About The Walking Dead. And the reason why is because with the comic now having a sudden ending to the comic itself at issue 193, a surprise ending nobody saw, we're going to discuss the impact of the series on popular culture as well as, you know, how it's impacted the television show itself, and how it's, you know, being perceived at this point. And just our favorite moments, kind of a nice retrospective and look back at a comic that really had a huge impact on just the overall scape of not just comics, but I think popular television as well.
Yes, it did.
But before we get there, let's go through some housekeeping first. If you're a fan of us, by all means, feel free to rate us on whatever app there or program you use to listen to us. Give us a great rating. Or if you hate us, just say suck it and just give us one star.
And why are you listening if you hate us?
I know. Otherwise, I would say that if you want to get more information about what's coming up in upcoming shows or have feedback, join us at Facebook at Geek Roulette on Facebook or at Geek Roulette on Twitter.
I think we got a new like this week.
One.
Excitement, yes.
Well, I did talk to somebody, and he said he just started listening to our podcast, and he was a fan of it. We'd get some feedback, too, about some of the audio inconsistencies, also about the previous episodes. But
shut up, Jim.
You know what? No, it's fair. I mean, both
I'm
of us...
I'm kidding, Jim, and everybody else, we appreciate your feedback.
Both of us hovering over, like, a microphone, now that we each have our own microphone.
We do. We have a whole new audio setup, if you want to peek behind the scenes here, everybody.
Now, it's not like a lady in a tram situation, where we're, like, a few feet away from making out with each other.
Yeah, no, that's creepy and gross.
Yes, well, I guess I know where you stand. I thought it was kind of intimate. We've been friends for a while, John.
We have. Love you like a brother, but not like that.
Got it. Moving on out of the awkward zone here, let's talk recommendations. I had different recommendations for the episode the first time we recorded around, but now that something's just come up, I'm going to recommend it. Coming out exclusively through Disney's DVD Blu-ray Video Club they have.
Disney Movie Rewards, I believe it's called.
Yes. They are finally releasing Disney's The Black Hole on Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah.
Now, in the old version of this podcast, before I had John as permanent co-host, we actually recorded an episode about The Black Hole, where we actually live-watched the episode, our movie itself, with one person who hasn't seen the movie at all, and then a few other people as well, and we recorded the commentary. The episode was lost. Well, now, I almost feel with this coming out, it is probably one of my favorite Disney movies just because of just how messed up and weird it is.
I would say definitely my favorite from that era of weird Disney's throwing a bunch of stuff on the wall and seeing what sticks. It's probably not for everybody, but it's good stuff.
I would say this. What makes this such a unique movie is that it was Disney's first PG movie. They were trying to capitalize on the popularity of sci-fi movies because of Star Wars. But they did not have a clear identity of what this movie was going to be. So there is just so many odd choices they made of this movie itself. It is prime Mystery Science Theater 3000 material. Yes.
If you haven't seen it, I definitely recommend checking it out. I don't know if it's streaming somewhere. I could probably check on that app that I recommended a few episodes ago.
You can stream or rent it through like Google Play and a few other services, but... I bought the DVD, and that's what we watched originally. It was just the original DVD, and now that it's coming out on Blu-ray, well, I have to see this in Blu-ray now.
Yes, but only if a certain somebody gets it for you.
Right, because of, Disney.
Because they have weird ways of making you get things like that. Mm-hmm. Like buying other movies and redeeming points, and then getting it on their site, which I will do for us.
That's my recommendation, is that if you've not watched Disney's A Black Hole, by all means, feel free to find a way to get a copy of it. Even if you can't get a Blu-ray, you can still buy the DVD on Amazon for like $8-$9, and it's worth it.
So it is, for the record, I did check that handy dandy app. You can rent it pretty much anywhere, Amazon, YouTube, Google, all that fun stuff. Not Apple, though, oddly enough. And you can stream it if you have a subscription to Hoopla, whatever Hoopla is. So if you happen to have a subscription to whatever that is, you can watch it there.
When I hear Hoopla, I almost feel like Mott the Hoople or Hoopleheads, which if you watch Deadwood. Yes.
I think out of all the vulgarities in that show, that one is the most PG, but also like probably my favorite one is whenever good old Al Swearengin calls somebody a Hooplehead.
You're a bunch of Hoopleheads.
Yes, exactly.
So that's my recommendation. John, yours?
I'm not even sure I remember what I'd recommended back then. I'm pretty sure one of them was a practical one, which at the time I was wearing some at the time. It was Duluth Trading Company clothing, because they're great quality stuff. I am not a big dude. I am tall, and I am a tubby little guy. Well, not so much little. And their clothes fit, and they are comfortable, and they are awesome. They're durable. They're a little on the pricey side, so you kind of want to, you know, sign up for an email thing. They have sales all the time on everything. They've also got clearance section, and they've got outlet stores, so it's not too hard to save some money, you know, if you don't want to pay $70 for a pair of shorts, you know, but you can wait for them to go on sale, and $30 is much more reasonable, especially for as nice as they are. But yes, they're nice. They don't, you know, the problem with me being tall, like 2Xs usually end up just not being tall. They just end up being made for fat people. So their 2Xs actually fit me. They go a little bit longer. They're, like I said, they're comfortable. They look nice. You won't look like a complete tool. And yeah, Duluth Trading Company. Give them some of your money.
Indeed. All right, let's move on to our arbitrary list. Our arbitrary list, mostly if you remember our talking points from the first time we recorded this, but one complaint that is always levied against the Walking Dead TV show is that some people feel it's perhaps gone on a little too long and that there's not a logical ending point. And the show itself has had some oddities. It's had its main actor leave the show a lot more prematurely than he did in the comic. Characters died before because they went on to do other projects. They've added things. They've stretched out stories. So our arbitrary list that we have is going to be what are each of our top three favorite, well, not favorite shows, but top three shows that we wish would have ended a lot sooner that are not The Walking Dead.
Yes. I'll go first. My first one is Once Upon a Time. This was a show I watched with my wife. I jumped on it earlier than she did. She went on for a few more seasons than I did just because, you know, the reason it's on this list, I felt it should have ended a lot sooner. They just kind of kept recycling plot points. Like, they kept finding reasons the bad queen or whatever from Snow White, you know, was the main villain for the first season. And then by the end of it, she became good, but then they kept finding reasons to turn her bad, and then good, and bad, and good, and you never knew what other characters. It was just, it kind of kept going to the point where I think the last season of it, like, most of the main cast wasn't even there. So they definitely should have cut it off by then. There were also times when just, like, characters would do things just to kind of move the plot forward, and but it was at the expense of characters doing things that was, you know, within that character. You know, they just do things completely out of character, if I can throw that word in there one more time, just to get the plot going, and it just didn't make sense. So I had to tap out on that one pretty early, and they should have, you know, cut the rope on that one sooner than they did.
I think the great irony with that show is the fact that it was actually Bill Willingham, when he had his comic Fables with Vertigo, he pitched it to ABC as, hey, this is what the story is. ABC declined on, you know, optioning it, and then they decided, hey, you know what, we're going to make our own show kind of like that in some ways.
Yeah.
And the amusing thing is that when I look back at the Fable comic book, it's a great comic book up through the first half, but then that second half meanders a lot.
Yeah, I think you could argue that, yeah, ironically, like you said, the comic book easily could have been, you know, was a comic book that should have ended much sooner than it did, and I think we even talked about that a little bit in our comic book episode.
Yeah, it's a callback to that, definitely, but yeah, I feel it's just something that they should have probably ended a lot sooner, so...
Yes. What do you got for your first one?
My first one I'm going to choose is How I Met Your Mother. And the reason why is pretty simple, is that the premise of the show, if you've not seen it, it's about a character who's the father, who's narrated by Bob Saget, to indicate age, and he's gotten older, and he's talking to his two kids, and he's telling the story about how he met his mother, or their mothers. The problem is, the show goes on for several years, and each year he has like a different relationship, and it's like, oh, is that the mother? And it's not the mother. And it starts getting kind of weird, because you have to then put it in the perspective that this is a character that's telling his kids how he met their mom, but he's also basically telling his kids how he's managed to plow through several different women before he got to meet his mom.
These are all the ladies I screwed before I met your mom.
Yeah, I mean, if my kids ever ask me, hey, Dad, how did you meet Mom? It's like, well, we met on an online dating site. But I wouldn't, like, give the narration, well, let me tell you several years before all the failed relationships I had before that. Right. You wouldn't do something like that. So they finally introduced the mother, and when they did, it got even worse because, spoiler for this, but, you know, fast forward a minute or two if you don't want to know, but they meet the mother, and we find out, yeah, they get married, but then the mother eventually gets cancer or gets an illness and dies. And then we find out the reason he's telling these kids the story is because one of the other characters he was romantically involved with, he's trying to ask his kids permission, can I date her? And it's just bad.
Yeah, kind of creepy and weird.
Mm-hmm.
My next one is Family Guy, and kind of by extension, I suppose, also, is American Dad still on, or is that done?
I think it's still on. I think they're doing new episodes on either TBS, TNT, or Adult Swim.
Kind of the whole Seth MacFarlane animated world, you know, because I think there was a Cleveland show as well for a little bit.
That was canceled.
But it just, I don't know, it just seems like they're kind of running with the same jokes. They're, you know, hey, what about the, you know, this thing? And they stop for a few seconds for some weird little pop culture, you know, interstitial of the show. And it was funny for a while. I mean, don't get me wrong, the first maybe six seasons, I suppose. But I think after a while, it just kind of the plot started to get more and more ridiculous. And they kind of, you know, started to get more crazy. And that's kind of when they started to lose me. Plus, like I said, some of the jokes just kind of kept getting recycled and, you know, just kind of got to be old hat. So that's when I think could have probably pulled the cord. I think it was good that, Fox, I think it was, or someone, whoever it was, revived it, I think was a good thing. But, you know, I think it's still putting out new episodes now. And, you know, you can stop. It's okay.
Hey, I think every show hits that problem where they hit that sweet point where they have the 4 to 5 great years. But then after a while, it's like, where do we go from there? And then it just becomes more formulaic. And I think that's where the problem comes into play.
Yeah, and I think the better shows know, like, hey, we're done. We don't, you know, like, I think Rick and Morty's going to hit that point. I think eventually where, if they go like nine seasons, I think that's going to be kind of ridiculous. How many were they just renewed for?
I think they were renewed for 6 more seasons.
Was it six?
Six or seven? I can't remember what the number is.
That's a bit much, but we'll see, I suppose.
My next pick that I have on this one, a lot of people love this show, and I understand that, but I feel that it could have ended so much earlier, and that's The Office. And the reason I choose The Office is because it starts out, and the core driving force of the show, you have all these quirky characters in Office, but it's really Will, Pam, and Jim get together. And they eventually do at the end of the third, beginning of fourth season. But then after you do that, it takes a lot of the tension out of the show itself. So then they like, well, we need another couple to be the romantic focus. And then they say, maybe Dwight, let's take the unlikable guy and have him be the guy that's also dating.
And put him with the unlikable girl.
Right, let's do that. And then they had other romances that they try to substitute in there. But there was a logical ending point for the show, and I feel it's when Pam and Jim got married in the fifth season. And when they did that, they could have ended right there. They didn't. They kept dragging it on. And at that point, you know, there was another logical ending point. That's when Michael left the show. And then when he, you know, which is Steve Carroll. And when he did, no, they decided not to do that. They added on David Spader, and they went on another couple of years. And by the end, it just felt very tired and just hashed over at that point. And
yeah, that's one of those, like, every time I think it's leaving Netflix pretty soon. Everybody's like, oh my God, I'm canceling Netflix because The Office isn't on there. It's like, you know, that it's okay. You know, there's only a few decent seasons. There's other ways to watch it. You know, the DVDs are cheap. Plus, you know, it's not like that's the only good thing on Netflix. But yeah, I would agree that that was a good show. And I think I tapped out right around, I might have even tapped out before the wedding, I think. Somewhere in the fourth season, I want to say, is when I made it. Maybe even the third. But yeah, good show, but definitely could have ended sooner. My last one I've got is kind of a generalization. It's basically most, if not all, primetime network TV dramas/procedurals. Most of them, you know, I think kind of like you said, they have that kind of sweet spot where they're good for a few years, where they're interesting because it's this new take on a procedural or whatever it might be, or a new, you know, situation that makes it interesting, or maybe even just really good actors that give it something good to, you know, good to play with. You've got a good ensemble cast or whatever it might be. But I think after a while, it just gets kind of tired out and they end up playing out all these different relationships. Everybody gets married to everybody else on the show. Maybe somebody dies at some point. But I think after a while, I mean, at the end of the day, they're just procedurals or whatever, you know, or something even like, what is it, like Law and Order, where it just, you know, it gets played out. We get it. You arrested a guy. Now they're going to court. And yeah, we've been there, done that. You know, get your nice little stories in and call it good.
So my last choice, one show that I feel, once again, it had its, I think, very good sweet spot of like a couple years where it was some of the must-see TV. It also, I think, helped set the stage for a lot of other shows after it. But The X-Files, I feel the first couple of seasons, they did a great job setting up a lot of the mythology. But then I think the mythology of it is what bogged it down. And eventually people started liking the Monster of the Week episodes. And it was a show that once the X-Files movie came out, I believe in 98... it just started getting money after that. David Duchovny would leave the show temporarily for a year or two. You know, they brought in Jason Patrick. You had it where Gillian Anderson left for a while. And it was just a show that the biggest problem when you have a show like this is we don't have a definitive ending. And they were definitely making up so much of it along the lines. It drags out to the point where everything just gets to such a muddied maze that you have no idea. And other shows that almost kind of follow that same formula, like Lost, I think, follow that same formula where they didn't have definitive endings, so it got muddy in the later seasons because of that. Still a good show, but I think it got, as I said, just bogged down by that. Even Battlestar Galactica, not having a clear idea how the show's going to end was one of the things that worked against it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, X-Files was a great show for a few years there, but I think after a while it just got so bogged down its mythology, and like you said, I don't think they had a clear answer for a lot of it, so they just kind of teased a lot of it out for longer than you wanted to, and then when they tried to answer it, it wasn't near as satisfying as it should have been, or just made it more confusing. And like you said, when Duchovny left, I think that took a lot of the wind out of the sails. I think he left before Gillian Anderson did, you know, his hiatus, I should say.
He left, back, I think, around the fourth or fifth season or so.
Yeah. So, yeah, TV shows that should have stopped before they did. There you go, people.
All right, let's talk about The Walking Dead. So, as I said, this is kind of a retrospective of The Walking Dead, almost a memoriam of a comic book that I managed to do so much in, showed what was capable of, you know, independent comics in its entirety. And to recap the comic itself, it follows, really, I think the central character of the comic is going to be Rick. And Rick Grimes, he is a small town Atlanta cop, and he gets shot, goes into a coma, and he wakes up in a hospital, and he realizes the hospital's abandoned except for the Walking Dead zombies.
Dead in here.
Dead in here. So he goes out, he's looking for other survivors, and he eventually meets a band of survivors, which also includes his wife and kid. And it's essentially a comic that shifts from where the horror of the world being zombies, moving on to actually that what happens to society and what people will do when there's no longer rules anymore. When you see what people are willing to do to survive, and that, you know, one of the more infamous phrases from the comic itself is when Rick says that it's not the zombies that are the Walking Dead, it's them that are the Walking Dead.
We are the Walking Dead.
So
it's a nice big two-page splash.
It is. Until, like, you get to, like, near the end of the series and he says they're not the Walking Dead.
He does, and I think that's another nice two-page splash, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
But it was such a great comic. It came out, didn't it come out around 03, 04 or so?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And it ran for 193 issues, had several one-shots.
Yeah, a few specials, probably, you know, roughly 200 issues total, give or take.
A few novels that came out to help explain the backstory of certain characters, but it was truly a hallmark comic in its time. It was very well received and popular early on, and as it went on, it started, I think, it started a movement almost, where I think other writers started seeing that what the freedom of being able to create your own world was. And a lot of people went to Image Comics to do that same sort of thing. And where the comic, I think, then created an entirely other huge impact, culturally speaking, is that around 08, 09 or so is when the show was optioned by AMC to become a television show.
Yeah, and I think, you know, getting back to, like, the comic, you know, unless we're going to hit the impact later, I think Image was really on it, you know, because it's published by Image Comics. I don't remember if you mentioned that, but Image was really on kind of a downswing. You know, it was fairly fresh out of the 90s, where it was kind of reliant on a lot of just hot artists of the day. And by the time 2000 rolled around, that was kind of not the thing anybody was looking for anymore. And Image was kind of struggling to find what they were going to do. And they put out Walking Dead, and it kind of gave them this big shot in the leg, this big resurgence, I think, to what we have Image today is like you mentioned, a lot of the creators kind of gone there to do their own thing, their own independent work, create their own characters, their own worlds and storylines that they want to do, even if just a quick reel, you know, couple issues. And that's where you go now to get your innovative, you know, great storytelling with good art that's not, you know, super flashy like it used to be. And I think that's, you know, due in large part to, you know, Walking Dead, I think, is something that kicked all that off. Certainly not solely by that, but I think that was a big thing that kind of drew people there, like you said.
Well, I think the other huge impact, when you put it in perspective, too, is that, like, this was debated in Comic-Con back in 08 between Robert Kirkman and Brian Michael Bendis. And Brian Michael Bendis, he got his actual big start with Image Comics. Image was definitely a studio that went and published a lot of his stuff, such as Powers and a lot of his earlier work, and that was instrumental in him getting hired by Marvel, and he went on to have great success with them. And the debate was, is that, you know, who's in a better position? Kirkman working independently and maybe not selling as many comics as Marvel, or Kirkman, who owns the rights to all his stuff and therefore makes more money off it because of licensing, or he gets more of a direct, he'll always get money because of what he created. And it was an interesting debate back then. And now when you look in the modern day and how many big name artists and writers have left your major studios like Marvel and DC, it was huge. I mean, but going back in terms of, you know, at least the comic itself, I didn't start reading The Walking Dead until probably mid-20s, 30s or so, those issues right there. And a lot of those, actually, I started reading when I lived with you for a short period of time.
Yeah, and I started picking it up right from the beginning. Zombies were always something I was kind of, had an interest in back in the day. This was before the huge, almost something that kicked off the huge, you know, the zombie explosion, which we'll get to in a bit. But I remember seeing it on the comic shelf at Shinders and picking it up on, you know, thinking it was pretty cool. And, you know, I think I bought it probably right up until where you came in, and then I switched to trade paperbacks, and I started buying all the trade paperbacks because I was buying them that way anyway, and I was like, well, I don't want to buy it twice.
You know, and that's when I started buying everything in singles, and I did up until, you know, the final day at this point. And
then your comic store screwed you and didn't give it to you.
It's okay. I should go back there and see if they gave me a copy. Who knows? Maybe they felt bad.
You know, the second printing might be in there now.
Yeah, second printing just came out as of when we're recording this right now of the final issue. But the key characters, kind of given a breakdown of who is who and who is the shakers and movers of the comic itself. Rick Grimes was the key character, and he would reunite with his wife, Lori, and Carl. And they would eventually, Lori would have a kid that would be Judy.
Yep.
But the thing is that
it didn't end well for her.
Well, also, that we'll probably wasn't Rick's kid. And
yeah, which they kind of hint at a little bit in the TV show as well.
Well, the comic, they do verify it pretty much. So
yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, the other characters, Shane, who is Rick's former partner, and he would go on to have an affair with Lori when Rick was in his coma, and which led to that.
And die almost right away.
Six issues in, but
yes, compared to where he died in the comics.
No.
Or in the TV show, rather, sorry.
Right, get it straight. One of us is drinking beer, one of us isn't, which is which. Yes,
and was working all day.
Yeah, all right, I'll give you that.
But new job.
But, yeah, you had those characters. You had other characters like Dale, who was an old man, an old camper. And you had Glenn, who was their scavenger. And Andrea and Carol. And they would go on to meet other characters such as Tyrese and his daughter, as well as Abraham, Eugene, Rosalita, Jesus.
Michonne.
I mean, there was a lot of characters that were introduced. And the one thing the comic was never afraid of doing was killing off characters. It would kill off characters sometimes without any warning. You know, they would not, they were good at some not telegraphing that, hey, the character's going to die, and sometimes it would just be out of the field.
And I feel like that's almost one advantage the comic had over the TV show, was that the TV show almost, you know, was kind of beholden to, like, what the actors were doing. Like, oh, this character's, this person's contract is up, and everybody would know that, so like, oh, they're probably going to die, or this character, this person just signed a contract to start this other TV show, so you almost kill the characters on the TV show just for these outside reasons that don't necessarily have a whole lot of story bearing. So sometimes, you know, they'll maybe get killed out of left field, but it's for an artificial reason, so it doesn't quite feel as natural. I feel like the comic did a pretty good job when they killed people, even when it was out of left field. It was a little bit more earned, and it was a little bit more, you know, you didn't feel that outside presence as much as you did in the TV show, I feel.
Well, I think the other thing that was also very crucial is, and this is why a lot of writers did move a lot of work over to Image, is that you own the characters. You can kill whoever you want, whenever you want. If you're reading a Spider-Man book and they kill a character in a Spider-Man book, all right, the odds of that character, if they're a well-known character that's been around for 30, 40 years.
And even if they're not a well-known character,
the odds of that character staying dead is always very little. Because
pretty slim to none. It used to be there were two exceptions to that rule, and one of which came back, but it was always, they never bring back Uncle Ben, or they never bring back Bucky, but now they brought back Bucky.
I thought they did bring back Uncle Ben, too.
I don't think so. They've brought him back, like, in weird ways, but never, like, directly in the Marvel. You know, it's like Uncle Ben from an alternate universe or something like that, but I don't think they've ever actually brought him back proper.
Right. So I think one of the most fascinating aspects of the comic is the sociological aspect of it, where, you know, what does a person become? What does it take to survive? And I think as the series went on, one of the great, you know, hallmark moments of it is that the characters would do terrible things, but they realize that if they had not done those terrible things, they did it to keep everybody else that they cared about alive. And then you realize there's other characters that do terrible things. They do the terrible things to stay alive, but also to maintain a level of either power or control, authority, or just to act out on impulses that maybe in a modern day they never would have because of the rules that existed.
Yeah, it's almost like that classic conundrum of, like, you know, if these laws weren't in place, would people actually still go around and kill and murder people just because, you know, is the law basically the only thing that's preventing people from doing these things? You know, I think for most of us, you know, I don't need a law to tell me not to kill people. I don't really want to kill anybody. But I think once you get this, what this did was show, like, hey, there's some crazy people among us that, you know, once society kind of goes to hell, they're just going to go nuts and do whatever they want. Well, you know, and maybe claim that it's for, you know, to stay alive or to help their family or whatever it is. But really, they're just kind of sociopathic, insane people.
Right. I think the comic generated some amazing villains. You had the Governor, which was probably one of the first main major villain, I guess, in many different
ways.
Yeah,
I think so. The Cannibals, I think, were a little before that, but they weren't really.
No, the Cannibals are after.
Were they?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because that was after they were. Yeah, you're right. Correct.
Right. The Cannibals are after. Then, of course, they run into Negan. They run into the Whisperers. You know, there was always some group, and I feel that's the one thing, and this is ironic, we're talking about TV series that go on too long. I think when I look at this series, and I just did a complete reread of this over the past couple of weeks, I feel that the comic is much like a TV show in some ways, where it was kind of running into that same bad pattern where, oh no, look, here's more peoples that have their own weird, bizarre laws, and they are actually being evil because of this, and they would encounter new groups, and then there would be huge distrust, or they'd encounter a new group, and they would be wary, but then they'd win them over because our ways are the better ways, and it was one of all was like two or three patterns, and I feel the way he ended it, the way the comic ended was that, not saying it just yet, but they solicited several comics after the one that, you know, was ultimately the final issue, and that was to throw people off, and he gives a big post word, you know, in the last issue of why he did it. And he says, you know, when you're watching a movie, you understand when the movie's getting close to the end. Sometimes you realize it because you look at the clock and you look at the watch and realize, all right, it's already been going on for this long. it's going to end soon. Or, you know, he says if it's a good movie, you don't even realize the time itself. But ultimately, it's sometimes the nice way to do it is to end something before people actually expect it to end or catch them off guard. Because,
yeah,
and it's funny because, you know, I think about TV shows in the same way where there's so many TV shows that build up to this huge ending and this big finale, and a lot of times they never stick it. And I feel that what if a TV show were to just suddenly just end out of nowhere? Not get canceled, I mean, but...
No, but yeah, but just the creators told the story they wanted to tell but didn't tell anybody that, hey, you know, I mean, because they... And I don't know that we're going to get that. I mean, can you imagine if they hadn't told us that this is going to be the final seasons of Game of Thrones when it came out? I mean... As much hype as they, you know, they use that, you know, hey, this is the last season to get people to watch and to get ratings. I can't imagine that any studio for, you know, or any network, rather, is going to pass up on that hype, you know, and be like, you know, this is the greatest show ever. You need to watch it now because it's going to be gone. And, you know.
Do you remember the last season of Alf?
No. Doesn't he? He goes back home, doesn't he, though?
No. The last season of Alf, he's supposed to. He's supposed to meet up with his people and go back home. But the problem is that the government's hot on his tail, and they actually capture Alf. And his people, like, they leave without him because they see that he's been captured. So the show ended in a complete cliffhanger where it's like, oh, Alf got captured by, like, the government and everything. Now, they did make, like, a made-for-TV movie, something like the kind of wrap-up what happened to Alf afterwards. And it's funny because he's like in his Area 51 lab and he's about to be dissected. And it took a weird, grim turn from what you normally expect out of Alf. And
wow.
Yeah. But that's just it. It's that they, you know, the show, they're like, all right, here's our cliffhanger. And then it's like, your cliffhanger is actually the show end. And there's some shows like that where it just ended so suddenly. Like, even Quantum Leap was like that. I remember, like, Quantum Leap, how it ended, but basically it's like, hey...
Yeah, it didn't quite end on a cliffhanger, and I'm not sure what the story was on that.
It was just same thing. They just got an idea that, hey, you know what, you're not getting renewed. So they had to cobble something together to try to wrap everything up, and ultimately it was a final graphic card that Dr. Sam Beckett never made at home.
Yeah, it said something where he kept leaping and never ultimately made it home, which, yeah, that's super depressing.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, going back to The Walking Dead, instead of just talking about Alf and Quantum Leap, which we could for hours.
We probably could.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd say that it was definitely a huge impact on the comic itself on just so many different levels. The way the comic ultimately ends, prior to the last couple issues when it finally ended, Rick, the main character, did die. He was assassinated by a jealous rival of sorts, and... Ultimately, it looked like the story was going to go on with Carl taking the lead of the comic itself, and then,
nope. We're done, guys.
And then the last comic touches on, like, what happens in the future world, and it kind of gives you, I wouldn't say, like, that Breakfast Club, and this is what happened with this guy, and this is what happened with this guy, but it did have something where I think it did a well enough job of trying to tie up and wrap up everything.
Yeah, I think didn't it kind of insinuate that Carl's been telling the story the whole time, maybe not. I thought that's what I had read about it.
No,
but it's, yeah, it does kind of have that happy ending where Carl's older now. There's people there. Society has essentially kind of not gotten back to where it was before. But
the better way to put it is that there's a generation removed where there's people that don't remember what the world was like before. For them, the world's an easier place. Yeah, there's some spooky things out there, but otherwise, it's nice. They didn't have to realize the horrors of what it took to get to that point, nor do they realize maybe how much even better the world was before all of that happened because of the fact that there was a much wider, larger world. Or was it
better? Dun, dun, dun.
They don't have Twitter now, so that's it.
Yeah, see? It's better already.
So, I going and taking a look at the comic, I mean, who are some of your favorite characters?
My favorites, I was a big fan of Tyrese. When he came along, he was just kind of this tough, no-nonsense guy, which is almost the polar opposite of how he was portrayed in the TV show. Tyrese, I was a big fan of Glenn. Andrea was awesome, and another one who was, you know, considerably different than she was in the TV show. I'm trying to think. Negan was a great villain, I feel. You know, always kept you guessing. Those are probably some of my top ones, I would say. I'm sure there's a few others I'm not thinking of, but yeah, those are my tops. What about you?
I think for me, some of my favorite characters, I was a huge fan of Andrea, and I always feel the TV show definitely shortchanged her as a strong character. I feel she was definitely a very strong feminine character that, you know, the comic thrived and many others didn't really have in many different ways. But yeah, she was always a favorite of mine. It's hard to say. I mean, there's other characters I think that were good. I feel that, like, you know, hey, Jesus was kind of cool in his own quirky way, and Ezekiel was always cool in his own quirky way. And I think that's what Kirkman did as the series went on, is he started introducing more quirky characters. And
yeah, and I feel they didn't get, like, I don't think we got as much depth with, like, Ezekiel or Jesus as we did with, you know, Glenn or Andrea or several other characters.
Yeah, and I always like Glenn, too. I think Glenn had a very good everyman perspective to what was going on.
I think he's one, like, I liked him in the TV show as well. I think he's one of the few characters that kind of, they did a good job of bringing him over without screwing him up too much.
Right. What characters didn't you like that much?
That's tough to say. Most of them died before, you know, before you really got a chance. I was never really a big fan of Laurie in the comic book or the TV show really either.
I think the TV show, she was definitely a much poorly portrayed character.
Yeah, they didn't do her character any favors there. I'm trying to, why don't you go while I try and think of a few.
Some characters I felt that were just kind of one-dimensional and didn't really add much. I wasn't as much of a fan of Abraham in some ways. I feel that Abraham always was just too gruff and just single-minded. I feel that I would say the governor I didn't like. He made a great villain, I think, but I think it was also another one of those types of situations where, like, the TV show did a much bigger job of trying to flesh out a lot of his background. And there was a novel for him as well that I've never read.
No, a couple of them, I think, if I remember right.
Yeah, but I always felt that his character, it was a character was very easy to hate. I almost think of the governor like being like a pro wrestling bad guy.
Yeah, he was almost cartoonish in his villainy. I mean, don't get me wrong, he did some horrific things that are definitely not cartoonish at all. And they kind of touched on those a little bit in the TV show. But they didn't go near as far as they did in the comic. I would definitely agree with that. I was also, and I had somebody else I was thinking I wasn't a big fan of. No, I just lost it. Damn me.
I hated Carl.
I didn't mind Carl. I'm just kidding.
I didn't mind Carl.
He's kind of middling, and I disliked him on the TV show much more than the comic book. The comic book, he was okay. He was not bad.
You know, I think he was a comic that anybody out there, I mean, there's various different ways you can get it. They do have various omnibuses where they collect like 50 issue chunks of the comic itself that you can go through and read.
You can get it digitally. You can buy the actual trade paperbacks.
I'm sure now that the whole entire series is done, I'll have a giant compendium out there that you could probably get once, at least within the next year or so, that'll have it all on there. But if you're listing this and you haven't read the comic and only know it because of the show, by all means, I feel the comic does so many things better than the show. Now, talking about the show, when the show came out, it was 2009 or 10, I think.
Somewhere right around there. Well, we're at 2000. No, I don't think it was that early because they're only on season 8 now, 8 or 9, and we're in 2019.
Hey, if there was only a handheld piece of technology that I could utilize to determine...
If only we had the internet in our pockets at all times.
Oh, wait, I do.
Oh, dang. Yeah, internet is your friend.
All right, so Google says... Mind my own business.
Oh. So what? You failed. You should have just went to IMDb.
Well, I'm trying. Sometimes I think the problem now is, like, things get buried a lot easier on, like, Google, and it's harder to find. I just want the simple answer. And
damn search engine.
Waffle. Dun, 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 dun. October 31st, Halloween, 2010.
Yep, see, I got mine in IMDb. I win. I'm cool.
No, you're not.
What the hell is this Walking Dead Red Machete? Is that the new spinoff that's coming out soon?
I know there's supposed to be another spinoff, but let's not get there yet.
No.
All right. So 2010, so it was in production for a year or two. They had Frank Darabont, who's known for a lot of his movies, some of the horror movies like Stephen King's The Mist. He was set to go ahead and direct and produce the show itself. And it started out with a 6-episode first season. Now, I think what was crucial about The Walking Dead when it came out is that it came out at the tail end of another craze. Because years earlier, that's when like everybody was just going apeshit over vampires.
Sparkly vampires.
Well, not even just, I would say, just Twilight, but you had True Blood. You had television shows out there. Vampires were, I think, at their like all-time highest in terms of popularity. So, yeah,
they're due for a resurgence in another few years here.
Everything's reciprocal. I mean, after a while, what was old is new and so forth. Yes. But they came in, but prior to that, the zombie culture, there was some things like 28 Days Later or
yep.
Dawn of the Dead that came out, you know, years prior to that. But there hadn't been anything that was really mainstream, that really projected zombies into the mainstream. So show comes out, huge hit. Everybody loves it. And what does AMC do? They say, all right, good job. How about you make more episodes, but with less money?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, that didn't make Darabont that happy, and he was released from his obligations halfway through the second season. Got into an entire bunch of legal, you know, battles with Robert Kirkman over the fact that, hey, you know, you owe me money because of what I did on the show, and the show was under like reporting its finances. So they eventually settled with him. Part of the other problem they had that came out of Frank Darabont leaving the show was that he cast some people that are actors and actresses that he've worked with in other movies.
They were quote-unquote his actors.
Right. So, like, the guy that played Dale, Andrea, those were, like, characters that died much more prematurely. Because Dale, he wanted to be out of the show right away because
he... And I think he did. Didn't he die, like, second half of season two?
They killed him off pretty fast, and Herschel eventually would take the role of what Dale kind of mostly did.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, so I think this, as the season, like the whole second season, they spent like on one single set because of how bad the budget was.
And it was a boring set.
Mm-hmm. And then they found the prison, and then that became an entire season. They met the governor. All in all, the show's been going on for 10 years. And from a comic standpoint, they've maybe gone through about, I'd say, 60-70% of the materials that are in the comic at this point.
Yeah, The Whispers just came out. That's probably around issue 120?
120, 130. Maybe,
somewhere in there. So yeah, they're a ways along.
I feel the problem is that they've done this in 10 seasons. One thing that I feel is always the biggest fault for the television show itself is that it pads. It pads horribly.
Yeah.
There's so many episodes where they call them character development episodes, but all it is like a couple characters either at a stationary location or walking down railroad tracks.
It's almost like they look at the season and they're like, okay, we're starting the season here at point A, and they're like, by the time we get to the end of the season, we need to be at point B, and they're just kind of like, and we have, you know, 12 episodes in here to fill in. And, you know, okay, I've got, like, maybe 10 episodes of stuff we can do. Okay, guys, we've got, like, 3 or 4 more episodes that we need to figure out and just, you know, so, hey, we're going to have just random stuff happen. Or somebody's going to go on a side quest that ultimately doesn't really matter.
I would almost liken it to going on a cross-country flight across the United States, but then you have, like, a 7-hour layover in Chicago.
Yeah.
And you're basically waiting in Chicago for the flight to get movement and traction again. And you're just bored out of your mind because Chicago's airport, O'Hare, is just so boring. And
yeah, exactly. That's a good way to put it.
But yeah, the television show has a huge impact for various reasons, though, because with this, I think it became one of like the other huge propelling anchors of what made AMC such a powerful station in the early 2010s. I mean, with that, they had Mad Men, they had Breaking Bad. I mean, they had such a muscle-packed lineup. What does AMC really have now, I guess, outside
of... Not much now. They've got the Walking Dead shows, they have... What's that, Into the Badlands, but that's not
that,
really...
That got canceled.
Did it? Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know that made that big of a splash anyway.
I watched, like, some of the first season of that on Netflix. It's an interesting show, because I always like when you kind of mash up genres, and it's really a mashup of, like... A post-apocalyptic samurai slash, I don't even want to say steampunk. It's like this weird amalgam of just so many different things.
I remember it looked interesting when it first came out, but I never got around to watching it and then heard it was just kind of, it's okay. So I never really went out of my way to watch it.
I might at some point go back to watching it again. But yeah, it's definitely one of those programs that it's interesting. But
yeah, I'm not sure what else. I'm sure they've got something that we're not thinking of because we're old and not hip. But not that, you know, I mean.
But I mean, it drew and had. Basically, it became a huge mainstay of television and also helped. I almost want to feel that thanks to The Walking Dead, it helped get so many other comic book properties option to television. It's almost kind of like that kind of phenomenon where like one thing does really well and then every studio is like, we need to find the next version of this. It's almost kind of like when Harry Potter became like big. You had every like movie studio snatching up the rights, like every other like, you know, like children's young adult book, hoping that, hey, maybe this is the next Harry Potter. And
yeah,
it never quite turned out that way. But they've lost so many different actors. They've had to have actors take on the roles that were originally based on other characters in the comic itself. I would say this. I mean, the show is good. I stopped watching around season 4 or 5.
Yeah, I don't want to make it sound like we're bagging on the show like it's a complete hot garbage heap, but because it does have its good moments. But yeah, I mean, I think we both kind of tapped out right around the same time. For me, it was a couple episodes after Glenn and Abraham died.
Yep.
And it wasn't even so much that they died. I watched that episode. I think I watched the one after that. And I used to DVR it, and I'd watch it like on Monday or Tuesday or something, because it shows on Sunday nights. And I had that third episode, I think, sitting on the DVR, and I was just like, I just don't feel like watching it. Like, I just, you know. Well, like,
I think even that episode really just pissed me off because there was so much hype about who's going to die.
Yeah.
And they had to try to swerve it, too, because in the comics, if you read, you knew Glenn died. Instead, they killed Abraham first, who in the comics died shortly before, actually, Glenn did.
Yeah.
But then they killed Glenn. But I think the whole thing is that they had this weird, like, time, not even time jump, but flashbacks that they were doing in the episode itself that just did such a poor job of building suspense.
They hyped it up like crazy all summer long. And then, the first episode, like you said, they did that swerve plus the weird flashbacks to what was actually happening. And it was just, they didn't pull it off as good as I think they could. And I think it just, I think I just got bored with it because the TV show kind of kept, you know, like you said, the comic book, it kind of kept cycling back with these. Here's a crazy villain, and now they got away from him. Here's a new community, and are they going to be safe there? And it just, I think I just got bored with it and just didn't feel the need to go back to it.
It stopped being fresh is probably the better way to tell it. And I think that's why we did the arbitrary list we did at the beginning of the episode, is that at what point does the show realize they do have a spinoff called Fear of the Walking Dead. And actually the spinoff, from what I understand, seems to do a little bit better than the actual regular show.
I know the first year it came out, I didn't hear all that great about it the first season. So I kind of, like I said, with Into the Badlands, and I was like, okay, I'll just pass on it. But I've heard it got better, like the second and third season, and it's still doing good now, so it must be, people must be watching it.
Well, and now that they're discussing that there's a new Walking Dead spinoff that's going to come out, I feel that with this new spinoff, I wouldn't be surprised if it almost signified the end of the current show.
Yeah, I could see that. Like, hey, we're going to do this one, it's going to come out in 2 years, and the year before that, though, we're going to stop the TV show. But they've also got, like, what, 2 movies that Rick Grimes is going to star in? I think and at least one of them is going to be theatrical, I think, is what I saw just recently.
Well, and the hard part, too, is this, is in the comic book, the way it ends is that it ends with, Carl. But Carl's dead in the show.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know who you end now as your focal point character, because right now you're only 3-4 characters you have left at this point. Is you have Michonne, you have Daryl, who is an original TV creation, and then you have
Carol's still around.
So, it's an interesting thing where I just feel it's been going on so long, but I feel that that show did still have a huge impact on so many other things that are happening at this point. I mean,
yeah, like I said, I don't want to make it sound like we're bagging out too much because it did have a huge impact. It's not completely horrible or unwatchable or anything. I think it's, much like I think if you said, if you were to sit down and watch it all in a row, you'd find all the cyclical things get kind of boring pretty quick.
Right. And I think kind of, going off onto the side of this is that Kirkman himself, he's kind of, like in the comics, he's still writing the Oblivion Song. His other series that he was really great with was Invincible. One of his shows that got option, and I don't know what the status of it is on TV, is Thief of Thieves. And I love, actually, Thief of Thieves.
I've never actually read that one. There is one other Kirkman comic that actually did get a TV series on Showtime or Cinemax.
Yeah, isn't it? It begins with an O, right?
Outcast, yes. Cast, yeah. Which is like, and I read the comic of that for a little bit, and then I just kind of got, you know, again, just lost interest, which was about some guy who got possessed or could get rid of demons. I forget what it was. It had something to do with demons and being possessed and stuff like that. But I think it had a season, maybe two, and then, you know, just didn't catch on or something. I'm assuming it's not coming out anymore, but who knows?
Right. But yeah, Thief of Thieves, he originally started writing. He co-wrote it with a guy named Nick Spencer who writes for Marvel. He's also secretly kind of a jerk. And I'll tell you more off the microphone, John.
Interesting.
But then, like, other writers like Andy Diggle would take over on the comic itself and writing for it. But that was, I love that. I actually think I have, like, all of that filed digitally. I can probably get it to you.
Nice.
No, I mean, I legitimately, actually, I own all the copies, too. Let me be very clear here. I own all the copies of the comic itself.
I supported the comic book in its physical
form. I may have also come across digital copies that somehow but I did buy every copy of the
comic. You did your part, yes.
The series actually just ended about a couple months ago.
Interesting. I wasn't aware it was still coming out.
They ended it, I think, around issue 33 or 34 at a sort of a weird cliffhanger. And then they had sort of like a 7-8 issue wrap-up then that they took almost like a hiatus, if you will.
Interesting. Have you read any of Oblivion Song?
Actually, I have the first 8 issues, and I have just been meaning to get it. It's in my pile.
I have the first 7 or 8, and then I bought the first trade, and it's pretty decent. There's definitely some world building he's doing there. I think once he's got a couple trades, that was when I think they even started it. Like, they were considerably far ahead on it. Like, I think when the first issue came out, they had, like, the 12th issue was done already or something. So, like, kind of allowed them to go back, you know, like they'd think of something they should put in a previous issue, and they went back and did that. So, I think that's that, and that might even have contributed to why he stopped Walking Dead. Is I think it just after having done it for so long, and he got into the world building in Oblivion Song, which is definitely a lot more going on there. It's more of a science fiction type thing, and I think that just maybe pulled his interest away, and you know, kind of kept his.
I think it's hard for anybody to do anything for such a long period of time and not. I wouldn't say not get bored, but eventually, I won't even want to use the word get disinterested, but I think eventually you kind of want to say, hey, this is where it ends.
Well, yeah, I think you can only do it for so long, and you're like, you know, I've said my piece here, you know, as much as I'd maybe love to hang out in this world, you know, that's just being done. I wouldn't be surprised, like, if in maybe 5 to 10 years he comes back to Walking Dead, just does a different, you know, like he sets it in Europe or he goes over to California. So, you know, he does something different with it, you know, much like the TV show kind of did a little, you know, the Fear of the Walking Dead is kind of a slightly different spin on it. I could see him coming back to the Walking Dead universe and just do it set in a different world, you know, different part. You know, maybe we see how the whole zombie apocalypse started, you know, what set it off, even though he's kind of said that he's never going to do that.
Nope.
But, yeah. Good stuff.
Right. Well, I think we've covered quite a bit on The Walking Dead itself. I mean, as I said, it's comic just ran, just 193 issues, so it's out there. Feel free to read it if you haven't, or if you're only a show only person, or, you know, if you're a person that still sticks with the show and you want to give us a 1-2 for not staying with the show, by all means, feel free to do so. I think
tell us why we should start watching it again.
I would say, yeah, challenge us that. I mean, I think the hard thing is in today's modern landscape of entertainment, especially with now so many original productions now, like on Netflix, Amazon, and Hulu, there's a lot of competing for attention. So to sit there and say, hey, this still must-see TV? No. Is it something I would watch eventually? I might get around to it, but it's not something that I'm going to put up the top of my list to prioritize.
Agree.
Like, I just started watching The Boys on Amazon, which is a conversion or adaptation of Garth Ennis's comic Seth Rogen.
How is it, by the way?
I'm 3-4 episodes in. They've changed a lot of some of the elements, which I understand why you would have to for the show.
So you'd have to read the comic book, so I'll be curious to see. We should do a show on that.
Yeah.
I'll watch it as...
Have you ever read the whole comic?
I have not read a single issue of it, so we can go into it as... Have you read all of it? Or most of it, at least?
Oh, yeah, I've read all of it. I got all of it, too.
Then we can just compare notes based on what you thought of it, having read it, and what I thought of it not having read it at all.
I will loan you the comic. The problem with the comic is that Garth Ennis does a lot of his same shock stuff where he does things for the sake of shock or a laugh and everything. Yeah. But as the series goes on, I think he kind of like leaves some of that jokey stuff behind, and then he really builds a good tension about the world of superheroes and how dangerous it is when you don't have somebody to keep them in check.
There you go, everybody. A pseudo recommendation.
Yep, it's a back end recommendation right here. So that should probably wrap most of it up for this episode.
Yes.
I'd like to thank everybody for taking the time to listen. As I said, if you like listening to this, go ahead, by all means, give us a rating, follow us on social media, or just hit stop and never, ever think about it again.
Yes. Thanks, everybody. Have a good one.
Thank you very much.